All right. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Debbie. For those who care to join us, let's have a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room, and the restrooms, which are across the main foyer and up a flight of stairs. A small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And tonight we are on step three, and we have Harmony and Mickey here to share their experience, strength, and hope with that. And what we do is we read a paragraph, and then the two of them will introduce themselves a little bit and discuss step three and how it's worked in their lives. So, step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood him. So we're going to start the reading on page 60, which we've heard many times and how it works. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. See that God could and would if he were sought. Harmony, you want to go first?
I'm Harmony. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Harmony.
I'm very grateful to be here. I want to welcome you if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to drink. I love alcohol. I believe that alcohol does for me. When I drink alcohol, I believe I feel differently than normal people. That it does something for me that it doesn't do to the rest of the population. And I feel so much better with a little bit of alcohol on board. And I didn't even know before my first drink that I felt that bad. I wouldn't have been able to describe it for you. But when I was 14 and at a slumber party with a bunch of girls and had some vodka and orange juice, I was like, this is what I've been missing my whole life. I don't need anything else. And I did not set out to become a drunk, but I never forgot that feeling, and I drank alcohol every opportunity that I got. And I absolutely love to drink, and one of the things that came along with that is that I my life just seemed to tailspin. I did not drink for very long. I got sober when I was 18, so there wasn't a lot of time there, but I could not handle any of the problems that I had when I was drinking. And just things just seemed to happen to me. I had accidents. I had trouble with my parents, trouble with my brothers. I had trouble with teachers. I was often getting kicked out of classes and getting sent to the principal's office for behavior issues, failing tests that I should have done really good on, and trouble with friends at school, where I was always seemed to be in some kind of tiff with some girl or somebody at school. And this is what we call in Alcoholics Anonymous unmanageability. And I did not know that that was directly related to my alcoholism until I was in AA for a while and learned how to kind of stop doing that stuff and realize that I could have a life that was not filled with unmanageability. And that's a little bit of what this is talking about here, that in A, we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. I was out there drinking, and I was sent to adolescent treatment by a counselor that I was seeing. And when I was at adolescent treatment, I was like, yes, we're all crazy young alcoholics. Yeah. And I totally 100% identified with that. I'm crazy like all these other kids, and we love to drink. But I did not feel like I had to listen to the counselors or sponsors or people in AA, because I thought, I still have my life together. I still have my whole life ahead of me. I was looking at scholarships. I had a job. I had an agenda, a plan for how I was going to handle all of this. And I ended up with only a 30 or 40 days of sobriety, moved to California. I had $500 in my pocket, and I ended up homeless, jobless, and spent all that money. I was sleeping on the floor of some guy's house who I'd picked up in an AA meeting, and I was using a beach blanket as a blanket, or a beach towel as a blanket to sleep at night. And for the first time, when I arrived at the AA meetings, I was like, oh my gosh, help me. Help me, you people. I haven't drank anything. My definition of sobriety was pills and weed. So I wasn't really sober at that time, but I was like, help me, people. I cannot handle my life, whatever. I haven't drank anything in 60 days, 90 days, and I am living on the floor of some guy's apartment that I don't even like. I can't even stand looking at him, for the first time, I got these three things before I ever stepped foot into AA. And when I came at that time, I was like, I knew that nobody could save me. I was just hoping AA could save me and fix my mess. I knew alcohol was a problem, and I knew I was a problem, and the way that I thought and the way that I made decisions was a problem. I came to believe that God could fix all of this if I sought him out. Thanks.
My name is Mickey. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is January 7th, 1989. 2 weeks before that date, I remember calling my mom at 2 o'clock in the morning. I was hammered. And I said to her, if this is what life has to offer, I really don't want it anymore. I think about that all the time nowadays, and what a heavy burden to lay on a parent. And my mom came over to my house at 2 o'clock in the morning that night. It probably took her 15 minutes to get there. I know she was dead asleep, scared beyond belief. And I think to myself, how self-centered could you be to call somebody and wake them up out of bed and tell them that? When I got here, I would have told you that I had a really bad childhood. I had a really good childhood. I had four sisters that I didn't care very much for, but I had a really good childhood. I never wanted for anything. I was raised for my first 12 years in Maryland, and then we moved to Virginia Beach, and I never drank until I got to Virginia Beach. And I drank when I was 16. I drank until I was 26. I drank for 10 years, really hard, and some other things were involved. But for the progression for me was, my first DUI was, I had a .16, my second was a .23, and my third one was a .27. And at a .27, I passed all the field sobriety tests, and they wouldn't let me go because they said that I reeked too much of alcohol. So they called another cop, or they got me to, they were going to get me to blow into the thing in the back of the police car. And it didn't work. I was like, yahoo. Like, escaped again, right? Nope. They called another cop. So the other cop gets out his machine, and it don't work. I'm like, yahoo. They're like, we can't let you go. So they took me downtown, and I blew a .27. So, and the reason I tell that is because at a .27, I'm walking around my life like nothing's happening. Like, it's just another day. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was not really completely positive that I was an alcoholic. I knew that I drank too much. I knew that that whenever I got into trouble, drinking was involved. Because I never got into trouble when I wasn't drinking. But I wasn't really positive I was an alcoholic. Anyway, I got a sponsor when I had 30 days sober, and I started working the steps. And my sponsor absolutely saved my life. And here was the first conversation with my sponsor. I said to him, I said, would you be my sponsor? And he said, have you ever done this before? I said, no, sir. And he goes, well, do you think you're going to make it? And I was like, what kind of question is that? I'm like, I hope so. And he goes, well, here's the deal. I'm sponsoring 7 people right now, and if you're going to be a real pain in the butt, this ain't going to work. He used a little more literal language than that. However, that was exactly what I needed to hear. Because I needed somebody to tell me that this was not a game, and we're not going to be playing around, and this is serious. And he was my sponsor all the way up until last year when he passed away. For 25 years, he was my sponsor. And that man absolutely saved my life. And I'm not here to put him on a pedestal because he's just another alcoholic just like me. But he introduced me to God. And that, in turn, saved my life. So, thanks.
Thank you. We're going to continue right on that page. Being convinced, we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he's more likely to have varied tricks.
So, like I said, when I came in initially, I didn't really listen to what anybody in AA said. I was coming to meetings and I was hanging out with what we call fringers, people that are on the fringe of Alcoholics Anonymous that some reason like to hang out around here but don't do anything. And I was in that group. And I would sit around and talk about how dumb it was that we had to be here. But I was going to meetings, and I wasn't doing what anybody said until, like I said, I had managed to move to California sober and got myself, proved to myself that Harmony's decision making doesn't work. I have to tell you, I'm really, really grateful that I didn't have to do that for 10 years, that I didn't have to do that or prove to myself over and over and over again that my way doesn't work and AA's way might. So when I came in here, and ultimately got sober, I was, like I said, I was like, help me, people. I'm like, I did grasp onto my sponsor at the time. The Big Book says, like, the dying sees a life preserver. I did look at her that way. I didn't know what I was going to do. I needed help, and I knew I needed help. But that goes away very quickly as soon as they start telling you what to do. And wait, hold on a second, you know? I had big plans. I had plans. I thought somebody my age needed to be in school, and my sponsor didn't think that that was a good idea. She thought I needed to spend a little time in Alcoholics Anonymous and getting sober and working and paying my own way a little bit before I got into school, and she ixnayed the school plan A for me. And there were a handful of little things in my early sobriety in between 30 days and 4 months of little escapades with other newcomers that really proved to me that I cannot manage my own life and that my will only gets me into trouble. And I saw all of these things, like arranging things, arranging plans, arranging guys, arranging my friends, like trying to get everything to look a certain way so that I could feel good and we can all have a good time. And and I saw how I can step on the toes of my fellows and make them really angry, how I can tend to be mean and egotistical when I'm not getting what I want. And it was really, really ugly, and it made me really willing to do the fourth step, like to get that all out on paper and to tell somebody else about it and to see myself for what I really was. And the willingness to do all of the AA program came with time and from self-will really ruining my life and making it really, really hard to live without alcohol. That's all I have to share.
Thanks. Mickey Alcoholic, and I'm really kind of a word guy. I really like the words in the Big Book, the way that they use them. Like self-propulsion. That's a pretty cool word, right? Because I always look at the book and I always think, these guys were drunks. Like, they weren't writers, mm-hmm. right? They were trying to save their own butt just like everybody else in this room. But they wrote this book that has zero loopholes for an alcoholic to get out of it, right? So that's really, in my opinion, that's the hand of God in the writing of AA. Because I was always in collision with somebody or something. So I didn't like it very much when I read that. I was like, I'm just being prepared. Like, you have to put everything in place. Like, everything is so good on the outside and so broken on the inside. And I learned that at home. That was passed down. Really, the way that they describe all of the director, the ego, the egomaniac with the inferiority complex. That was me to a T, because I would either want to be the grass or the dirt. I mean, excuse me. I would either want to be the lawnmower or the dirt. I was never satisfied in the middle. I was either feeding on my ego every day, being the lawnmower running people over, or I was the dirt because you were way better than I was. I was never in the middle. And I didn't know how to achieve that at all. And I think that's what AA does. I think AA gets you to be a person among persons. You know, one thing that I was thinking about this morning was, I've lived my life around a ton of directors. I mean, really. My dad was a director. He just... my grandfather was like that. You know, the people that I worked for growing up, the people that I hung out with were all directors, because water seeks its own level. And the neatest thing is when you come to AA, it's like coming into the show me place. Because we don't direct people, we show them. And that's what my sponsor did when I first got here. But he didn't direct me what to do. He didn't tell me what to do. He showed me what to do. And that's a life-saving skill. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks. All right, we're on page 61, but we're just continuing on after that paragraph. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony?
Harmony.
So when I was probably 5 years sober, God sent me a boyfriend from Wisconsin. I was, I grew up in Minnesota, and I was a jock, and God sent Tobin from Wisconsin to my home group, and he already had time. And he had a job, he had an education, he was really good looking, and I remember saying this to somebody, an old timer, I remember saying, God sent me a boyfriend from Wisconsin, like, because I'd been waiting for him. I had been such a good girl in AA, and I was ready to have my, like, my special AA relationship. So, I, like, would be so beautiful every time that I would come to the meeting, and I would just accidentally walk by him and all sorts of stuff. I ended up becoming really, really good friends with Tobin. Like, Tobin doesn't like women. So that was a really, really bad, that was a big blip in my plan, and it took me a really long time to accept that. That was never going to change. It didn't matter, like, how short of a skirt I wore. Like, that was never, ever going to change. And I wish I could say that I did not have some tearful nights, like, some really bad weeks over this. Because, it makes me sound really crazy, and I have to admit it to you guys, that is the truth of what I live with, you know. And I can apply that type of insanity to any area of my life. You know, like, I had that type of power driving, that type of, this is going to work out the way I want it to anything. You know, like, I had this really awesome job that I really, really loved. And I came back from maternity leave and they changed all my job duties. Like, my literally from one day to the next, all of my job duties had changed and it was a completely different job. And I spent a year trying to make myself fit into that job again, and I couldn't, and I didn't fit anymore. And these are the types of things that AA has taught me how to deal with. And one of the biggest things that gets into my life is this indignancy that they're talking about here. And what that is I start feeling like life doesn't treat me right. AA doesn't treat me right. And it's a very subtle form of self-pity. And it starts from what my agenda was, maybe even a year ago. You know, my agenda was to get this job and stay at this job for 10 years and never leave, never have to look for another job. And it's quiet. It's very subtle. I may not know any of that stuff. And then when things aren't working out, I start to get pissed off. I start to get mad at AA. I start to get mad at God. And that may also be very subtle and subconscious. And it infiltrates into my life. So my husband's like, "Why are you grumpy today?" I'm like, I don't know, you know. And the truth is that it all stems back to this self-will problem, Harmony self-will problem. That's all I have to share.
So that reminded me of a funny story. Thank you. But I'll start off with this first. In the first year of my sobriety, I know that me and my sponsor had walked through the steps. And the story that I was going to tell you happened at 9 months. But I want to go back to the beginning for a second. When I got that last DUI, I knew I was going to have to fess up with my parents. And I went over to their house because they were the people that I trusted most in my life. And I went over to their house and I told them I was in trouble, and I was doing some other black market kind of activities, and I shared that with them. And I said, "I really need some help, and I've been selling a bunch of weed, and I need to stop, and I need to change my life around." And my dad just looks at me, and my mom looks at me, and she goes, "Like, how much weed?" So I had to come up with a fictitious figure because I didn't want to tell the truth. So I said, "Maybe like $100,000 a year." And she goes, "You are the scum of the earth, and get out of my house and never come back." And that was right at the beginning of my sobriety. It was the first time my dad ever jumped in to save me. He said, "Bernie, I think that you should go ride in the car with Kelly for a little while, and me and Mickey are going to try to figure this out." So luckily my dad had a police officer friend. Anyway, so I just wanted to share that about my mom, because my mom was my anchor. She died when she was 59 years old and I was 10 years sober. But I wanted to say that when I was 6 years sober, my mom went to my anniversary meeting, and on the way home, this is what she said to me. She turned over and looked at me, and she said, "I can see today that you are a much better person having had drank than never having drank at all." And I was like, holy smokes. What I wanted to share was, at 9 months sobriety, so I said that we worked the steps in the first year. So we were probably like at the ninth step, okay? Probably at the ninth step. And for 9 months, I was, for 8 months, I think, I would go to meetings, I would go home, I would read my big book, I would isolate myself from the world because I didn't want to hang out with my old friends because they told me not to. I damn sure wasn't going to hang out with you guys. So I was stuck at home. Anyway, I got into this relationship at like 8 months. And it was a girl that I met at my Friday night meeting. And it got really bad really quick. And I remember riding home from Galilee meeting one night, and she lived on Shore Drive. So from Galilee to her house was about a 10-minute drive down Shore Drive. And I was driving down Shore Drive, and I remember this like it was yesterday, and I was gripping the steering wheel, and I was praying, right? And I was like, God? I was like, I don't really feel very good in this relationship. And if this is not where I'm supposed to be, I need a sign. And I pulled into her driveway, and her ex-boyfriend was there. So I was beating on my steering wheel, yelling to God, that is not the sign I wanted. Thanks for letting me share.
Yeah, you gotta be specific. All right, we're going to move on to page 62. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help.
If you're new, this is a concept you have to get. You have to get that your troubles are of your own making. And it is an incredibly painful process. And I remember talking to my sponsor, and I did not feel good after every time I talked with her. I felt worse most times because I felt because she was showing me how my problems were delusion, fantasy, self-will, self-centeredness, and I did not like how that looked and how that sounded. There's no way to feel good about that. The only way to do better. And there was an old timer when I was new that said, you will have self-esteem when you start to do esteemable acts. And when I was able to get my self-will out of the way and start doing things the way that God would have me do, then I was able to stand on my own two feet and look at people with clear eyes, with my head held high, and say exactly what I mean, and be a person that had this, like, radiate self-esteem. Like, and none of you have the benefit of seeing me when I was new and seeing me as a person with low self-esteem, you know? I had moral and philosophical convictions. I had things that I knew were right and wrong. I had beliefs, and they weren't just religious, but I had this inner conscience that I could not live up to. It would be this little voice that was like, you should really be nice to them. And I could not do it. Like, whatever the thing was, you know, whether it was, you know, it was not drink alcohol, not smoke pot. Like, the list was really long when I got sober. And AA, and through this process, I have learned, and I am now able to live in a way that I feel like most of the time, not all of the time, but most of the time, I'm at least trying to do God's will. You know, like, I'm not rebelling against it. I'm not, I'm doing the best I can to keep self-will out of my life. And when I do that, all I get are real life problems. I get the life problems that everybody else has. I don't get all of the crazy unmanageable alcohol problems, alcoholic problems, the stuff that normal people aren't churning up all this chaos in their life for years and years and years on end. And getting sober at 18 saved me from that. So that, not to say that I never held self well, I never have alcoholic problems, nothing. Like, I still can dip into that sometimes, but I've been spared 18 years of this constant chaos that alcohol and alcoholism and alcoholic decisions and alcoholic motivations brought into my life.
that part in there where it talks about selfishness will kill us. God makes that possible. I think that's like the scariest thing that I ever read in the big book. Because that kind of reminded me of like my upbringing about God. Like, you're going to hell. So when I read that, I was like, that's pretty mean. That's what I thought. And it says, our troubles of our own making. It is amazing that that growing up in AA and being able to develop some skills like taking responsibility for your action, how much it alleviates the problem instead of the problem have to continue to come back year after year after year. For example, resenting someone like gravely. You know? Like to the pit, to the core. I mean, that's what I came here with. I mean, I had poison deep embedded deep inside of me. So when it talks about our problems of our own making, like even in the fourth step, in the fourth column, taking my responsibility for the part in it, it is amazing how it alleviates the resentment. I mean, it's just incredible. Like this book, I'm gonna say this, hopefully you guys will laugh and not take it the wrong way. Because this guy used to say this all the time, but it's really the truth. He said, you can get $1 million education in AA shoved up your butt a nickel at a time. I'm telling you, you can learn more out of the AA book than anywhere else in the world. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks. All right, we're going to continue on page 62. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom.
Someone described it to me when I was new that trying to follow God's will is like being a kite, and that you keep yourself tethered to God, and then you won't blow out of control, and you'll be, you know, protected from whatever storms may hit in life. And that has definitely been my experience. I have not been spared all of the heartaches that life has to offer. I've had those too, but I trying to have a relationship with God and abide by spiritual principles and do the stuff that we do in AA, I have been given grace, where alcohol isn't on my mind. It isn't something that I want to pick up. It isn't even on my agenda. I don't think, oh, maybe in 10 years when I have a little bit more sobriety, then I'll start drinking. It's gone. The obsession, the problem of alcohol and drugs is gone. And I've also been given a reprieve from paralyzing selfishness. Somewhere along the lines of doing this process of AA, I am selfish. I can have selfish motives, but my motives changed and became very altruistic, where I genuinely, it started with caring about newcomers in AA, but it turned into, you know, genuinely caring about other human beings and even being able to stop and notice when they're having a hard time and look for these little light bulbs that God gives me, like, oh, this is a person that may need you to say something to them. They may need $5. I feel now as if I'm an agent of God and that God works through me. And I felt very disconnected from God. I knew that when I was new, I knew that that's what I was supposed to be doing. that I was supposed to be feeling that, and I was supposed to have this feeling in my, you know, I was supposed to have this connection, but it wasn't there. I couldn't get connected to God. And it was self-will that kept me from getting there. So when I had, I graduated from UCLA, and I had a very prestigious education, and I was working in a doctor's office for like $12 an hour, and I thought I should have been making more money. Like I was barely getting by. And I had a big time resentment, and I found it really, really hard to go to work every day. And one day I started taking care of this patient who had many, many fractures, and he had many wounds, and he required a lot of care. So I would spend some time with him dressing his wounds and taking care of him. And I was mad. I was sick of eating peanut butter and jelly. You know, like, I was ready to have some of that Beverly Hills cashola that I saw everybody driving around with. You know what I mean? And I had worked really hard for it. And this guy, he had lost his entire family in the accident that gave him all those wounds. We're talking like five people, including kids. And it was, AA had trained me to just show up and do my job, to show up on time, to show up well-dressed, and to, no matter how I'm feeling, to just do what I'm supposed to do. And I did not want to be doing this job anymore, but I showed up every day. And one day, while I was dressing this man's wounds, he said to me, like, does God exist? Why did God take my entire family, you know, like, what, like, and kind of like, why did this happen? And like, I'm like standing there, I'm like, ooh, you know, like, I said to him with complete, like, utter conviction, there was nothing that I did to this guy except for be kind to him and take care of his wounds that would ever give him any indication that I believed in God. Like, I didn't wear a cross around my neck. There was nothing like that that would give him an indication to talk to me about God. This was God-directed. And it felt like God was in the room with me saying, snap out of it, kid. I need you. And so what I said to this man was, I do not know why this happened to you, but I know that eventually the pain will pass, and you will feel connected to God again. And that this life is not all there is, and that you will see your family again. And I 100% believe that. I still believe that now. And I was able to say that to this man and get him through whatever that blip it was. And like, all I am is a channel. I am supposed to be wherever it is that God wants me to be on that given moment to say whatever it is that somebody else needs to hear. And AA helped me get harmony out of the way so that I could do those kind of things.
So it was talking about that we are building an arch through which we pass to freedom. I've really often thought about that really hard, because I always thought that I was dealt a bad hand in life. And what I've come to realize is that I just wasn't playing my cards right. I was dealt a great hand. I just didn't know how to play. And at the end of my drinking, even though I wouldn't really buy off on the idea of me being an alcoholic, I knew immediately when I came into AA that my life continually got better from the first day I ever got here. When it's talking about freedom, that we're building an arch through which we pass to freedom, I look at, well, I was definitely a slave, and I was losing at this war game. So then it talks about that God is the Father, we are His children, that He is the principal, we are His agents. That's one of my favorite parts. Because check this out. All right. Let's say you sell insurance for a company and you're their agent. Then you work for that agency, right? Okay, so your friends come up to you after the meeting tonight. They say, what do? I work for God. Right? He is the principal. We are his agents. And if you really think about that, there is so much truth to that. Like, there are so many lives that are spared because of AA representatives. It is absolutely amazing. So here's what I want you to check out. I'm a word guy. Really like the way that they put that book together, right? So let's envision an arch, shall we say. Okay, here it is. That's an arch, right? And the third step, it says, is the keystone, right? The keystone. And these guys are not writers. Okay. There is only one keystone in an arch, right in the middle. They only mention keystone in the book one time. In We Agnostics, there's only two cornerstones in the top of an arch. Two cornerstones. In We Agnostics, they mention cornerstone two times. Okay? That's it in the whole book. Now, let's take away the top of the arch, and what do you have? You have two pillars that really look like the number one. And step one, up to this point, is the only step that has two facets to it. That I'm powerless over alcohol, that my life is unmanageable. And we're building an arch through which we're going to pass to freedom. Now think about what that arch contains so far. It contains my powerlessness, my unmanageability, my new belief in a power greater than myself, which is in We Agnostic, which is the cornerstone of our program. And now we have the keystone. So we're going to pass through this arch from 4 to 12 to freedom. It's pretty incredible. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. All right, let's see if I can do this without crying. All right. Page 63. Probably not. Okay, we are now at step 3. Many of us said Doormaker as we understood him. Y'all can join me. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me, and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. Of thy power, I love, and thy way of life, may I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon themselves utterly to him. Okay.
You're such a goober, Debbie.
Let's let Debbie go first.
Yeah, exactly. You act all tough. I say this prayer every day. I desperately need God to remove the bondage of myself and take away my difficulties so that I can do his will. They crop up all the time. I have a very wild 3-year-old, and I will be perfectly patient until he decides to check his brother halfway across the room. And then the bondage of self, which fear and resentment and frustration and impatience all just rears its ugly head again. And I have felt how wonderful it is to be in God's grace and to do what it is that God would have me do. And I have been blessed over and over and over again, and over again I've been faced with that I really, really don't deserve it. Not when you really look at it in black and white, and with the things that I struggle with and my character defects and the level of self that I live with every day. I shouldn't have such a good life. I really shouldn't. And I am really, really blessed. So I keep saying it every morning, and I keep doing these things, and I keep seeking out input from people that are more sober than me so that I can keep bringing God's will into my life. Because when I start being the director again, and I start, it looks different now, because it's so easy to hide these selfish motives under ones that look good. You know what I mean? Like, and especially now that I know how to jazz it all up with AA language, and I need somebody to stick their nose in there and say, that doesn't sound like God's will to me. And wait, what are you talking about? You know, and I need to meditate in order to hear that the teeny tiny voice that is God, so that I can keep having all of these wonderful things in my life. And I, if you're new, this is really, really black and white. There isn't anything weird about it. There isn't anything esoteric. It's not a complicated. You're either doing God's will or you're not, and you know it. So, and if I'm sponsoring you, I'm going to tell you. So, you can decide today to start praying this prayer every day and to give your life over to AA and over to God and start getting all the benefits that the rest of us have. Or you can just keep doing what you're doing and you'll keep getting what you're getting. That's all I have to share.
And if you're not sure if you're doing God's will or not, you're at least sure when you're not doing God's will. Because that's a lot easier to figure out. That little gut feeling crops up, kind of dry in the throat. I really like this prayer because, first of all, you know, the foxhole prayers are, I'm always asking for something. I'm always, if you help me out of this one, I won't do it again. Well, he knows I'm going to do it again. So, in my opinion, this is a really cool prayer because it starts out in submission. It's, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Right? Like, okay, God, here I am. You can do with me whatever you want. You can put me wherever you want to put me, and I'm willing to do whatever you want me to do. That's pretty broad. I mean, it is. And it's awesome. And I was terrified of God when I got to AA. Really terrified. And I'm not terrified anymore. God's my friend. And I know that God only wants the best life for every one of us. And I think that we deserve incredible lives for everything that we have put ourselves through already. It's like, how many people get a chance to live two totally separate lives? Like, I know exactly how I don't ever want to live again. The other cool part about this prayer is that it says in the book that we don't pray for ourselves and we can easily see why. Okay? However, this is kind of cool, and it's kind of like a contract with God. God says, I'm going to take away your difficulties, not for your benefit, for the benefit of the people that I'm going to put in your life that you're going to help with my power. It is absolutely amazing. So I get freedom from my difficulties, As long as I'm willing to always reach my hand out to help alleviate problems for others. And I just wanted to share this one last story real quick about the power of God. I've already shared that my sponsor basically saved my life over and over and over again. In his last years, he was a cancer survivor for 20 years, and he caught pneumonia, and he went into a coma, and he was in a coma for 30 days. And when he came out, he was basically non-functional, brain dead, just non-functional. He ran, I don't know what happened to his insurance because he was a retired captain, but Virginia Beach General kind of kicked him out, and they sent him to Lake Taylor. Now here's how God works. One of my friends in AA at my home group is president of Lake Taylor. So I asked him, I said, would you need me a favor? And my sponsor's coming over to your hospital. I said, will you make sure that you keep an eye on him every day? And he goes, sure. He goes, what room's he going to be in? And I said, like 302. And he said, you sure about that? And I said, yeah, I think he's going to be in 302. So I'll tell you the rest of this story later. Anyway, I go over there one day, and he is in the hallway sitting in a recliner, and he has these mitts on his hand. And I go, and he's acting all crazy, really disturbed. So I go up and ask the ladies, I'm like, why do you have him in the hallway? What's up with the mitts? And they said he keeps trying to pull all his tubes out, so we have to have these mitts on him. So this really weird idea came through my head while we're sitting in the hallway, because he was acting crazy. He was really acting handicapped. That other word. So I laid my hands on him. And I said, God, please restore Jerry to sanity. And I just prayed it over and over for 2 or 3 minutes. And when I left the hospital, I called his wife. She was out of her mind in grief because of how he was. And I said, she's been in Al-Anon for 30 years. And I said, I know you got a prayer list going on. Why don't you put on the prayer list for all the people to pray the second step prayer that God restore Jerry's sanity. Now, for 4 months, I went and sat with him every single day. Anyway, I came in that very next morning, and he was sitting in his bed, and he looked at me and goes, hey, Mick, how you doing? And I started bawling because I was like, how does that happen? Like, I'm that kind of person that, you know, I don't really believe in the, like, speaking in tongues, and I don't really believe in putting your hands and praying on people. But that thought came through me that day, and it wasn't my thought. So, I mean, I guess my point is that I have been so skeptical my entire life. When I first started praying, this guy said to me, he goes, do you pray? And I hem and hawed about it, and he said, that was a yes or a no question. And I said, no. And he said, well, let me tell you, if you do, there's no way it can hurt you. And that was the beginning of my prayers. And he said, tonight, why don't you just throw it out there in the universe? Why don't you just say, hey, Ben's God, even if you're out there, help me. Prayer works.
Thank you. And that's the end of our readings for tonight. I'd like to thank Harmony and Mickey for wonderful. If you can help me with the baskets here, please, because we're going to pass the seventh tradition. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements tonight?
David.
Speaking of gratitude in action, I have some raffle tickets that are funded. They are $1 each, and the grand prize drawing for this will be two admissions to the Ocean Front Conference in February, plus a hotel room. Cost a buck, and the delegate will be sharing on Saturday, where Catherine said.
Thank you.
See you after the meeting.
Thank you. All right, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. Newcomers, this is the important part of the meeting. This is why we're here. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety that would like to introduce themselves by their first name so we can welcome you?
Hey, Elizabeth.
Welcome. Yes.
Glad to hear.
All right, we have literature.
Where's our table?
Our table's over here tonight. We have literature. There's a newcomer packet there if you haven't gotten one. Oh, I'm sorry. Yep. Hello, Ken. Welcome. Sorry I missed you there. We have literature on the table, and we have books for sale. The folding literature is for free, and there is a newcomer packet over there. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. And there will be Stephanie and David up here at the table tonight. If there's anybody that needs information about sponsorship, please talk to Stephanie or David up here after the meeting. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. We have other people using the church besides us. And then we record all of our meetings, and we have a website where you can listen to them, simpleactions.net, and I believe you can also sign up for an email listing for all of our upcoming events. All right, and we're going to thank Harmony and Mickey one more time.
Harmony, you're awesome. You're awesome.
So we're getting to come back. All right, thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting. And we go to Plaza del Sol, and that's at Colonial and 22nd Street, a wonderful little Mexican restaurant with all the chips you can eat. All right, who's going to read page 164, the last two paragraphs tonight? Leanne's going to read it. Thank you.
Only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. And for those who care to, we close with the Lord's Prayer.
Give us this day our daily bread,
And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.